SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. I made one of those perilous last-second decisions, because I've got a medical thing. After the show, and so I got to go to Albany, and so it's just at a timing juncture that made me decide: do I take a shower now, or do I wait until after the show? You know, it's one of those. I took the early option. So I look up at the clock, and it's 8:58. It's like, oh, for God's sakes. So I let me see. Is the shirt? Yeah, the shirt is on right, I guess. Let me. I was sort of, yeah. It's like running for the bus when you're a school kid. And then if you miss it, you know, you sheepishly go back inside. Ma, can you drive me? What is wrong with you? Actually, that made me think of something. When I was in grade school, discussed our growing up momentarily yesterday with Lindsay Schultz, her growing up in Simsbury. We moved to 66, 67. So I must have been like 8, 9. And the grade school, when I was a little kid, the grade school was literally right behind our, Buckley School was literally behind our house. And then we moved, mile change away. But my mother was working in real estate, and there was the condominium complex that was, you know, like a, I don't know, maybe a 5-minute walk. So there were some days I would walk to the condominium office if I didn't like what they were offering in the cafeteria. And so I'd walk, and my mother was selling the condos and Northfield Green, and so she would, you know, throw me in the car and drive home and make me lunch. Telling this story makes me feel really spoiled now that I'm thinking about it. And then she would drive me back to school, and nobody would even miss me. I'd be gone, you know, whatever the 30 minutes for lunch, 35 minutes. But it's a pretty good system. You have no idea what goes on in my head when it comes to telling stories. Stuff like that, it just pops in my head. Popping up on the show today, the one and only Randy Moss. Randy Moss TV on your Twitter. And not just the last couple of days, but literally since the end of Breeders' Cup, Randy's been following the fascinating trials and tribulations of the timing of these races from Breeders' Cup. And today's Wednesday, so it must have been Monday. Randy had not a revised final time, but specifically with the Classic, there's basically three races where timing was evaluated, reevaluated, recalculated, hand timed, etc. And we've had this conversation with Randy and with Andy Beyer, and of course it's in connection with the Beyers that this whole this whole discussion point, not just the buyers, C.J. Mikowski on Time Form, C.J., it's been driving C.J. crazy. Virtually anybody that makes figures, Jerry Brown, the Ragusan team, everybody, they're all encountering these difficulties. So Randy showed what the final, what the anticipated or perceived final times are. And I asked them to come on and provide the clarification for everybody to appreciate and, his thoughts. And also, seeing as how his home track, as Hammer mentioned on Friday, Oaklawn, I mean, literally, it you look at the calendar and it just is so unusual to anticipate. But there it is. And they will take entries after Thanksgiving. So I wanted to get Randy's thoughts. And actually, now that I think about it, it'd be interesting to let him opine on how he thinks the track will play too, because it's a whole different atmospheric aspect. And it will be notable, of course, how the winter sets in at Hot Springs, given that they had pushed the calendar back a little bit, away from that January period where the racetrack historically, over the years would lose, a day or two to a frozen racetrack. And they've been actually fortunate on that front the last couple of winters. But it will be interesting because obviously it's going to get colder and before it gets warmer after they get started on December 3rd, and looking forward to being there. It's going to be really fun. We're going to we'll broadcast from Oaklawn, the first, second, and third. Yeah, and then on to Arizona for the symposium. I was up early, and I threatened the other day. I said I'm going to have to start laying out the calendar for next year, and it's upon us. I actually went ahead and got the Vegas travel arranged for NHC to be here before you know it, obviously. So Randy Moss to start us off this morning, and we'll also check in after Randy with Dick Powell, and we've been watching and actually threw a couple of action bets in at Happy Valley. They're up to the eighth. They're about 5 minutes away. So we'll get we'll probably get the ninth, which is a handicap event, in with Dick. That'll be the last. So you're about 5 minutes away from the eighth, and then the Tokyo handicap goes as the ninth at 9:50. So it'll be perfect. We'll get Dick in, and actually Dick can talk a little. The timing is certainly an area that he's got plenty of experience, and I also want him to talk his impressions of the HISA rules. We will discuss them further. If you missed Monday's visit with Alan Foreman, I recommend listening to that. And Matt Hegarty will walk you through other elements that we didn't even get to with Alan. So we'll do that with Matt after Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale with Sid Fernando. And got a few things for Sid. Get his follow-up to the way the rest of the sales action has continued. And sale continues to be good. A lot of good trade. A lot of in full mares being moved around. Got some thoughts from Sid. I also want him to talk about English Channel, and he can also maybe touch on Rock Your World going to stud, and how 10,000 they announced for Rock Your World. And I do not want to forget, I'm going to write it down right now. I want to ask him about Lady Spite Spear too, right? Because we brought that up. So I'll let Sid riff on that topic. There it is. Beautiful. Slide that over there. All right. That's for Sid. And as mentioned, English Channel. And if you were listening just now, obviously, to the replay from yesterday, the conversation with Todd, and you know, it's always bittersweet and a little sad, but I always reference Shug. Shug's got the best attitude. He just says it. It's part of the circle of life, right? This for all of you Lion King fans. Now, I've never actually seen it. I just know Circle of Life comes from that, the reference. yeah, so. and thank you, Eric. I'm glad that Eric just reminded me, speaking of Oakland, after last year's scuttled HBPA convention, they're going to follow through, and much like Keeneland is getting the lost Breeders' Cup back, so is Oaklawn, March 1st through the 5th at Hot Springs. And you know what? I got to go back and look at my calendar and see. I think that actually is going to correspond nicely to the spring travel. So, all right, Eric, I'll thank you. We'll have to, here, let me take a quick glance, because Fountain of Youth is the 5th of March. Tampa Bay Derby, yeah, then we got Tampa. We'll be going to Tampa for Tampa Bay Derby, and OBS March is the 15th and 16th. So the question, the Rebel is the week before at Oaklawn. So maybe we could marry that. So we may spend a healthy 10 days in Hot Springs. That could work, because Risen Star is the 19th, and we're definitely going to New Orleans as well. The President's Day weekend, the 21st. Nice. All right. I'm glad you slipped that in. Nice. Thank you. We're going to grab Randy Moss. And, of course, it is Wednesday, so the Saturday cards are going to be filled out by later today. Meantime, racing at Churchill today, and you can watch it on Fox. And then back to Aqueduct tomorrow, and that terrific Friday card that we're looking forward to. And I'm going to put up the pictures the way Andy challenged me to do. And we'll do some handicapping tonight and tomorrow for the big Friday action in New York. When it comes to the weekend, I think we've got another modest weekend ahead. I know that we've got the Red Smith at Aqueduct, and the Native Diver at Del Mar on Saturday. Those are the two principals, and yeah, it's kind of a quiet fairly quiet leading up to Thanksgiving weekend. And Thanksgiving weekend, things pick up considerably, including the Comley and the Turf Sprint Championship in New York and the Long Island as well. And, of course, the Stars of Tomorrow card, number two, the Golden Rod and the Kentucky Jockey Club. So, Hollywood Derby and the like, the Hollywood Turf Festival at Del Mar as well on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Back to Del Mar and the Matriarch and so forth. Happy to get Randy Moss to join us, and we've had at least one other conversation on this topic, which is the frustrating timing scenario, and Andy's been on as well to offer his rather, irked response to this. But Randy, thanks for joining us, and thanks for tracking this coming out of Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, Steve. I mean, I know I come across to a lot of people as someone who's just obsessed with this stuff because I fire out these tweets now and then, you know, sometimes often. But it's, to horse players, it's, you know, there are a few things that are more fundamentally necessary than accurate running times.
Well, it's the basis, as we say every time this topic comes up. It's the information bedrock of what the game's about.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, can I give just a brief overview of how we got to where we are right now?
Of course.
Right? So, look, since the late 1930s, horse races have been timed in America using a photo eye beam timing system that was developed by American Teletimer. And through all the variables in horse racing, at least for the last 80-plus years, in the vast majority of cases, horse players could be confident that the running times that they were basing their bets on were accurate. Maybe, I don't know the exact timeline, Steve, maybe 5-6 years ago, Equibase first began to notice that, especially at smaller racetracks, there were increasing numbers of bad times. Bean times that were bad, because in order to have an accurate bean timing system, it requires maintenance, and the maintenance is not free. It costs money. It's a capital outlay for racetracks to properly maintain these bean timing systems, and a lot of smaller racetracks were trying to cut corners, and they weren't properly maintaining their systems, and Equibase was noticing missing times, bad times, missing fractions. And so Equibase partnered with a company in England called Total Performance Data on a GPS timing system that it felt could alleviate some of these problems that they were seeing pop up with increasing regularity at some of these smaller racetracks. GPS timing systems, if done properly, would provide less maintenance. And they thought that could be a solution. The problem that developed, though, from everything that I've been able to ascertain, is that while GPS can be an extremely accurate vehicle for timing races, in order to get that accurate of a GPS system, it's expensive. And Equibase felt, from what I've been told, that level of GPS was prohibitively expensive. So Equibase instead went with a system that was less expensive. They knew it wasn't going to be as accurate, but they felt that it would be accurate enough. They thought that it was only going to be 1/5 of a second off, which, you know, to a lot of horse players is a deal breaker right there. But as it turns out, those systems, GPS systems, the GMAX system, was much less accurate than that. I mean, many situations where it was off 2/5, 3/5, 4/5, occasionally even a full second wrong. and it was a complete disaster. When it was called to Equibase's attention, and the Jockey Club is involved in this as well, they initially, you know, it was a kill the messenger kind of thing. They initially resisted the criticism and felt that it was accurate enough. When they finally realized that they had a problem, to Equibase's credit, they came up with a new solution to improve final times. What they are doing now at Del Mar, for example, is they're taking beams, the old-fashioned beam technology, and they've retrofitted these beams to use RF antennas so that they don't require hard wiring that can go bad and that can be expensive. And therefore, you can have beam timing at the start and at the finish of races. They rolled that out at Del Mar toward the end of the summer, early fall Del Mar meeting, and it worked perfectly. The last weekend of the Del Mar meeting, we tested it, video timed it. It worked beautifully. The final times at Del Mar were very accurate. But they could do that for only, at least for now at least, for only the final times. The fractional times were still provided by GPS. I know Equibase and the Jockey Club had hoped that the fractional times, again, would be accurate enough. But unfortunately, what we saw at the Breeders' Cup, you know, America's Championship Day of racing, that the fractional times were pretty inaccurate in some of the major races. It's wildly inconsistent, Steve. The Dirt Mile, for example, the fractional times were good enough. They were very close to being perfectly accurate. Not beam accurate, but close enough. But in races like the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Breeders' Cup Distaff, I even had time to check all the other races. They were inaccurate to a point that it's very troubling to horse players. So that's kind of where we're at right now. There are some other racetracks that have embraced GMAX technology for final times, unfortunately. Tampa Bay Downs, Woodbine. Tampa's getting ready to start here pretty soon. And hopefully Tampa will incorporate this new RF beam technology to at least get accurate final times. I mean, last year the Tampa Bay times were a disaster.
Yeah.
And Woodbine times have been even worse for years. I mean, millions, maybe tens of millions of dollars have been bet at Woodbine over the past few years by horse players on the basis of information that was inaccurate. So, I mean, we're slowly maybe getting a little bit better with some of this stuff because of this hybrid beam system. But it's still got to be installed at these racetracks, and it still leaves a problem with fractional times, which GPS cannot time nearly as accurately as a beam timing system could.
For the purpose of the work that you put in to address this and the way in which you presented it, you use the same kind of timing video program that we've discussed before?
Yes. I mean, you can use modern video software. You can download video of races into the computer system. You can use frame by frame, forward and backward, and you can come at some distances within just a couple of hundredths of a second accuracy, at other distances within a tenth of a second accuracy in order to double-check these times. And, I mean, the guy that deserves credit for a lot of credit, really, for initially sort of being the whistleblower on all this is Craig Milkowski of Timeform
right.
US. I mean, Craig was all over this a couple of years ago, and that's actually what brought it to the attention of Andy and Mark Hopkins and myself and got us involved in the video timing. But yeah, I mean, that's what we've been using in order to double-check these times. And my God, unfortunately, like Woodbine, for example, I do speed figures at Woodbine, and I have to time every single race that's run at Woodbine. And I can't, there's no time to concern myself with fractional times. I've got to just do the final times for the purpose of our buyer speed figures. And like a couple of years ago, you know, I knew that the Woodbine speed figures were inconsistent. And I just chalked it, I did the best I could, but I just chalked it up to the synthetic racing surface. I thought that because of the synthetics, which can change a little more dramatically during the course of a card than dirt, that was the reason for the inconsistent speed figures. And Michael Dickinson would tell me, the Tapeta surface is actually not that inconsistent. It actually stays pretty, you know, and I would be like, well, you know, Michael, I don't think so. He was right. It turns out it wasn't the Tapeta inconsistency as much as it was the bad times that we didn't realize were bad at that particular point. And so now, of course, at all the G-Max tracks, we're forced to that all the G-Max tracks that use G-Max as an official timer. We're forced to time all these races ourselves. And let me just say one more thing. I mean, I would look, we have nothing against technology. We have nothing against G-Max offering all of this sophisticated GPS technology if they want to sell it to people and they want to try to sell people on, you know, their calculations of stride length and average stride length and number of strides and things like that. That's fine. I mean, they can, you know, they can offer whatever they want to offer to horse players, and horse players can be free to take it or not. But the problem has been when they have inserted themselves as official timers and have then taken those GPS times and put it into the record of, you know, of horse racing that unfortunately have proven to be very inaccurate.
Yeah, and I have not had a chance to reach out to Sal Sinatra, who is still in the early stages of his role at Equibase, and I've got a lot of confidence that Sal will do everything in his power to, you know, have answers and you know, gain stability on this front. What, in your dealings with Equibase, what has been, you know, the response and how much, you know, how much movement or confidence is there that there's a resolution that's going to provide, you know, consistent timing and credible, you know, credible data, essentially?
I can give you an opinion. I'm obviously not privy to the internal communications at Equibase and the Jockey Club and things like that. And I can give you an opinion that might not be popular in some circles, but I'm going to give it anyway. Sal Sinatra is no dummy. Sal's a smart guy. Sal understands, and I haven't had conversations with Sal about this, but I'm extremely confident that Sal understands the problems with G-Max, because when Sal was at the Maryland Jockey Club, they stopped using G-Max as an official timer and reinstated beam timing. And suddenly their timing problems completely disappeared. So Sal understands. But I think right now, in my opinion, Steve, the fundamental problem that we have, the Jockey Club has spent a lot of money on G-Max. They've invested quite a bit in this technology. Whether they were sold a bill of goods to begin with about the accuracy of G-Max, or whether they erroneously decided that they could go with a less accurate GPS technology and they would be okay, you know, I don't know the internal situation there as to which is true, but I do believe strongly that the Jockey Club is trying to justify its expenditure in this system and is so far unwilling to admit that it doesn't work. If you look at the G-Max chart for the Breeders' Cup Turf, that's published, It's published on the Equibase website. I think you have to have an account, but those who have an account, I encourage you to go look at the Breeders' Cup chart. Compare it to the Daily Racing Form or the Equibase regular chart with its very competent chart callers at Del Mar. Compare it with the video. It's amazing. It is so inaccurate. It's absurd. And we're talking about the most important grass race in America, one of the 5 to 10 most important grass races in the world, right? The GMAX technology does not work. And I, for whatever reason, and I think it's because of the expenditure that's already been invested in this thing, some of the powers that be are loath to admit that they made a mistake.
Well, this just falls into the arena of frustrations, Randy. That much like what transpired with the juvenile turf on Friday, essentially displays a disregard for the players and what the players need to confidently involve themselves in the game on the wagering front.
Yeah, I think the needs of the customers have unfortunately been forced to take a back seat in all this. And, to answer the second part of your question, do I have any confidence this will be corrected? Okay. Sal Sinatra's a smart guy. Jim Gagliano is a smart guy. And Gagliano and the Jockey Club have made some extremely beneficial contributions to the sport. I mean, look at the Jockey Club involvement with the whole Jason Service, Jorge Navarro thing and the investigations. I mean, and there are other avenues, too, that the Jockey Club has been, have done things that are just very commendable. This is just one element of all the things that the Jockey Club does that has not turned out so well. I do have confidence that ultimately this will be resolved, but it's taken too long to get resolved to this point. And I think preferably it'll get resolved quickly. I mean, what really has to happen, Steve, and I know you're probably short on time. Let me just say one more thing. What I think has to happen is what Santa Anita did. I mean, Santa Anita recognized that that it, along with other racetracks like Del Mar, like Woodbine, like Tampa, other racetracks who initially, a decade ago, discontinued their beam timing systems and went with Trackus as an official timer, which is not as accurate as a beam timer. Now, the Trackus, old-school Trackus technology for times, for final times, has been more accurate than the GMAX GPS, but still not as accurate as a beam timing system. Santa Anita realized, they stepped back, they saw the problems GMAX was having, they were having problems with Trackus. And what Santa Anita did was invest money in completely restoring and rehabbing its old beam system, that they had to order parts, they had to redo wiring. It took months and money to fix their beam timing system, but they realized that their customers needed a beam timing system for accurate final times. And it went online this past fall in the most recent Santa Anita meeting, and suddenly all the times that Santa Anita had that were problematic completely disappeared. And the times at Santa Anita now are very accurate. To its credit, Naira, Churchill, places like that have resisted switching from their beam timing system. Oaklawn, Fairgrounds, same thing. But the racetracks like Tampa, like Woodbine, other tracks that have pulled up their beams, Del Mar, have pulled up their beam systems and are now using other technologies. They need to do what Santa Anita has done, spend a little money, take care of their customers, and go back to it. Unless they want to spend a lot of money for a GPS system that works, put the beam back in place and give their customers accurate final times.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, when it comes to the beam system, there is the occasional seagull or the occasional wayward pony that might trip the occasional beam, but it's few and far between, and it's easily recognizable when there is a beam, an inadvertent beam break. You folded in the Trackus topic. Trackus, it seems, has kind of had an arrested development in terms of its maintenance and progress. It seemed it got to a certain point and then has been kind of on autopilot since.
Yeah, and I don't know all the details about that. I've seen the same things that you're talking about, and I don't know all the internal politics here, Steve, but they exist. There is an element to this whole GMAX thing that involves a desire to compete with Trackus. There's some animosity there between Trackus and GMAX, and it's part of this whole equation, the desire of the Jockey Club and the desire of Equibase to put a product out there to compete with Trackus. For whatever reason, whether it's because they think Trackus has underserved its clients, whether it's personal, I don't know. But I can tell you that certainly is an element in all of this that also can't be ignored.
Randy Moss with us addressing the Breeders' Cup internals and the final time. The final times haven't been questioned from an accuracy standpoint. Before I ask you an Oaklawn question, Randy, address for anybody that doesn't necessarily understand the buyer fig part of the equation, and that this does, people I saw in the thread after your original post, people asking, well, what's the new figure? Explain how that is unaffected.
Well, there were three races on Breeders' Cup weekend in which the final time was corrected by Equibase, and it's very complicated. One of those was the Juvenile Fillies Turf, in which, due to reasons that would take me 10 minutes to explain, the Equibase GMAX people mistakenly went with the GPS time instead of the beam time, realized its mistake, corrected it to the beam time, which was accurate. The other two races were the 2 5 furlong turf sprints, the juvenile turf sprint and the turf sprint, in which the hybrid beams were put in the wrong place. Therefore, it appears that they used the GPS times for those two races, which, to no one's surprise, are inaccurate. It doesn't affect the buyer speed figures for a couple of reasons. First of all, for the 5 furlong turf races, those are kind of one-offs. They were the only 5 furlong turf races, turf sprints on the card. And so we have to kind of take those figures as standalone races and project figures for those 5 furlong sprints often, which we did in the case, in the case of Golden Pal on Saturday, for example, who ran an incredibly fast race. The other times at the Breeders' Cup, from everything I can see, the final times were accurate, and that's what we base our buyer speed figures on, so we didn't have to make any changes to those.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your availability to flesh this out so that people, people that have heard bits and pieces understand the full picture. And I have to ask, because I'm intrigued by the scenario of being able to look on December 1st or so and see Oaklawn in your PPs.
It's great, isn't it?
It's crazy.
It's going to be great.
Any thought? And we've, between you and John White, we've discussed the intricacies of Oaklawn and its surface and how people can understand the come home times. But I'm curious, do you think there'll be any nuance to starting at this time of year? And then in January there's potential for that surface to freeze. I mean, historically, there's always been a couple of days or of either training or racing that's been lost to weather. But any thoughts about what it'll be like? I know it's only 12 racing days in December, but any thoughts to that portion of this equation?
Weather-wise, Steve, I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact. I mean, I was born and raised in Hot Springs. I grew up sneaking into Oaklawn Park. I mean, I was in management at one point as director of operations at Oaklawn Park briefly. I mean, Oaklawn Park has been a huge part of my life. It's why I'm involved in horse racing right now. But in growing up in Hot Springs, I can tell you the weather in January is worse than the weather in December in terms of the cold temperatures. So barring any unusual cold snaps or anything like that, I think the racing days in December will probably be even better than the racing days in mid to late January. I think it's fascinating what they've done here. Charles Sella obviously did a lot for Oaklawn Park. He was a one of a kind guy. I had, as I just said, I had the opportunity to work for him, and I knew him for a long time. And he was a very very interesting guy. Lou now is in charge, obviously, after Charles's death. And Lou, as is often the case with the new generation, is more aggressive, is willing to change things up a lot more than Charles was. The initial decision to run Oaklawn, to extend the Oaklawn meeting until Kentucky Derby weekend and not end on Arkansas Derby Day. I tried to get Charles to do that when I worked for him. I tried to get him to back up the Arkansas Derby because it was too close to the Kentucky Derby. He didn't want to do it. But now Lou not only extended Oaklawn to Kentucky Derby weekend, now he's done the right thing by backing up the Arkansas Derby to 5 weeks from the Kentucky Derby, which is going to be huge for that race. And the December thing as well, to sort of dovetail a little more with the end of the Churchill Downs meeting in late November and, give its horsemen a chance to immediately just transition smoothly from Kentucky to Oaklawn. There are other reasons, but it's going to be fascinating to see how it works out, and I hope it works out well for them.
Well, looking forward to being there for the first week of racing in December. We'll see you there, Randy. This was great. I appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving, and I'll see you in Hot Springs in a couple of weeks.
All right, Steve. Take care, buddy.
Randy Moss, everybody, and terrific opportunity to get the backstory, and I know people are frustrated, but you do have watchdogs, whether it's CJ, who has alerted people to this for years, and also the frustration over inconsistencies in run-up. Dick Powell's joining us. Dick is somebody that certainly has been involved in these discussions over the years as well, and we're going to talk about a couple of topics with Dick, but we're 5 minutes away from the last at Happy Valley. Dick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. Kind of a wild morning in Happy Valley. We've had a $268 winner already in race six. Happy Valley, kind of known as the long shot track, and it's lived up to its reputation so far this morning. Although the last race was an odds-on favorite that went off at 9-10, California Sybil. So now we're down to the last race, nine race card. The two is the big favorite, Fafa. and it's just a very good horse. Likes Happy Valley. In fact, loves Happy Valley. And from post six going two turns, he will be tough to beat. So I'm keying him with the one Hall of Champ who was 11-1, and the four Encanto Prepared, who's breaking from the outside, but does pass horses pretty alarmingly. He's 21-1. So I'm just going to play two with 1-4, 1-4 with two in the ninth race here, the Tokyo Handicap. This is a class three going 1,650 meters. I like to call it the metric mile.
Well, I'm just putting up as well the Form to Win grid for this race deck as well, and had a very nice pop in the fourth, $400 try, $88 for every 20 cents, and basically for the Form to Win glance had the second, third, and fourth tabs. And they ran 1, 2, 3, and the thing came back really nice. Then I got distracted. I didn't even get a chance to look at that sixth race. Doug White sending out that $268 winner, Astrologer, with Keith Young denying Zach Purton. Wild Astrologer.
We've had a couple of races today where, you know, there's a short stretch turning for home, and not a lot of time to get going, but we've seen back-to-back winners coming from last or second last and rallying in between horses that they're not, you know, going over the top, as the announcer usually says. They're going in between horses, so Astrologer kind of came out of nowhere to get up in time, and then the winner of the seventh race did basically the same thing. So, exciting racing. If you like prices, you got it at Happy Valley. But I do like chalk here in the last, but the one and the four represent some value in the Exacta or Quinella, however you're playing it.
Well, and to give everybody, you mentioned that Hall of Champ. Hall of Champ comes out as having the best average. What I did was I set the distance parameters. This is 1,650, so I set the parameters at 1,600 to 1,700, and over the last 10 weeks. So most of these are you know, based on either one start or two starts from this group. And just looking, that Hall of Champ is 11-1, and that's who's up on top. Super Oasis, the 3, is a huge price, 31-1, and then the favorite, Fafa, as you mentioned, and the 6, Surrealism, who's 13-1. Fafa is holding steady at even money. So the Form to Win form, essentially, is mixing in some really nice prices, much like you are as well. We're about a minute to post. Let me set up here so I can bring everybody the call. And Frankie Lauren and Vincent Ho.
The kid is on the one, Alfred Chan. He's the one who rode Astrologer at 134-1. No, he was not. No, he won. What was the other race he won? He went to the front and dominated on the front, and I got the chart here somewhere. But anyway, he still has the 7-pound bug, where Jerry Chow lost it because of his success. So in that race, in this race coming up, he's carrying 126 pounds, not 133. And Chan is a competent rider, and Casper Founds is like the king of Happy Valley. So that's a good combination, saving ground, getting 7 pounds off. Not bad. So that's one reason why I included him in the mix. But
Chan
can ride, doesn't get the greatest mounts. Yeah, he won.
That was the race with Fast Pace and Red Impact and Villa Fion. That was the race. I put up the Form to Win chart, and it produced a $440 trifecta.
Yeah, he put him on. He put him on the lead, going 9 for a long. Kept him there. Didn't back the pace down too much. I mean, they got a little middle breather there, but then turning foam, usually that's when those horses get run over, and he was able to hang on. So Chan gave that one a good ride for Castle Sounds. Now the same team is back here in the ninth race with the number one Hall of Chan. So they're circling around, just about 0 minutes to post. And when the red light goes off on the starting gate, they will start loading. There was a race, Steve, a couple weeks ago. I wish we had video of it. There's a horse who's just a reluctant loader. He doesn't act up. He just doesn't want to go in the gate. Once he gets in the gate, he's fine. Well, they must have had 10 assistant starters. I'm not exaggerating. It might have been more than 10 pushing this horse to get him in the gate. And they did. He got in, and he was fine. So they were well prepared for his reluctance, his truculence. They just overpowered him with the 10 or 12 assistant starters. But most of these horses are veterans. Most of them load pretty easily, so it's usually a pretty quick load. You see that in Japan, 18 horse field, and they're starting to load, and then boom, a race goes off. So the experienced horses kind of used to the drill.
Well, they continue to mill. It is post time, and they usually don't miss.
They also do something when there is a scratch. I don't want to keep bringing up the Breeders' Cup horror story, but when there is a scratch at the gate, they, instead of averting the camera, they keep the camera on, and you'll see when the assistant starter and the jock are taking the saddle off, there's someone standing there, and that person raises a red flag. And that's the official notification of the scratch. So they've already examined the horse. The vet is radioed up to the stewards. The horse cannot run. And then, late in the process, guy raises the red flag, so everyone knows that horse has been scratched. So it's a little bit different system.
There's your light, and they're going to load this group up, and Fafa continues to be even money. The two at kind of at the center of everything in here, but Hall of Champ has come down, Dick, down from 13-1 down to 11, now 7-1. Hall of Champ taking a lot of the late money.
That's a drop. Yes.
Right? Considering the size of these pools for him to get cut almost in half.
No, to go from 11 to 7 late in the betting, that's significant.
Will we be saying they knew? They knew in in Hong Kong. They know.
Well, I'll be happy. I got them in the pick three, so I'll be happy if they knew.
We'll see. We're just about set. And I've had it on in the background all morning. It's unbelievable. Then I went to take a shower and I missed that $200 winner. Unbelievable. Another reason to wait and to shower until after the show. Here we go. Nightcap, the Tokyo handicap from Happy Valley.
Off now at the 16.50. He wasn't fast out far. He's going to end up in the back half of the field. The Anomaly and Mercurial, with Mercurial in the inside holding the lead. Surrealism, Star of Yuen Long next, and wider is Exceptional Nice. A length away, Hall of Champ, around far from Encanto, prepared King's Capital. Then came Right Honourable and Super Oasis, and Sacred Ibis is a couple of lengths away last of all. At the 1,200-metre mark, and it's Mercurial leading. He strides away by two over the Anomaly, who had room to drop in. Exceptional Nice third on the outer, and fourth is Surrealism. Fifth is Star of Yuen Long, and then came Far. Next is Hall of Champ, one off the fence and pocketing the favourite. Two lengths to King's Capital. Inside of Encanto, prepared from Right Honourable. Second last is Super Oasis, and a length away last is Sacred Ibis. It is Mercurial, striding along freely in the lead by two. Exceptional nice around the anomaly from Surrealism, star of Yuen Long. Far Far is about mid-pack, six off the lead and held up from Hall of Champ and King's Capital next. Then Right Honourable and Kento Prepared, Super Oasis and Sacred Ibis is last, 3.50 to go. Leader is Mercurial over Exceptional Nice. The Anomaly takes an inside run. Far Far's come through and there's plenty of room for the favourite if he's good enough. He hit the gap and he hit it hard. Out wider then is Hall of Champ, Exceptional Nice, Far Far. Mercurial next from the Anomaly, but it's Far Far in front. He's out by a half a length over Exceptional Nice and he wins again. Far Far beat Exceptional Nice and Mercurial. Then came the Anomaly, followed across the line by Super Oasis running on, Hall of Champ, King's Capital, Sacred Ibis, and then came Encanto Prepared, followed in by Star of Yuen Long, and amongst the tail enders, Surrealism and Right Honourable.
Well, 1.7.11, I think, Dick, across the wire. That Mercurial ran a very nice race at 15-1 on the front end. Matthew Poon and Husinette Gelding and held third. It looked like they were all taking closer order, and he was going to get snowed under. But that was a good race, and this Fafa is obviously a serious type.
He's 5-for-6 at Happy Valley. All five of his career wins have come here. And he just passes horses. He has that acceleration. He was far back early. He did not get out very well. He was either 10th or 11th in the early running. One thing in Hong Kong, you can go between the horses. You're less likely to get shut off because of the scrutiny that the stewards have over the racing. The issue is, whether it's intentional or not, you still can run into traffic. So those horses out wide that have clear sailing, they have clear sailing, they have momentum, you know, they're coming. It's just a matter of whether the wire is going to come. But Vincent Ho, who's warming up for a big weekend, Stevie, because Vincent Ho will be back aboard Golden 60 in Sunday's Jockey Club Mile. As he goes for win number 15 in a row, one of the highest rated horses
Amazing.
In the world.
Wow.
And we have three nice stake races on the weekend. They're all preps for the Longines races coming up on December 12th. So Golden 60 scared away quite a few. There's only a field of seven going the mile. Kind of a different schedule this year. Last year when he ran in this race, he already had two preps. This year, this is his first up performance, so the Longines race will be second up. I think Francis Loy wants to just, you know, build them up. All the reports on him are more relaxed, just looks great, nothing not to like. And under the conditions of the race, he gets in with 128. Waikaku gets 128. The rest have 123. So this is not a handicap where you're facing horses with 113 and spotting them 20 pounds. So Golden 60 back on Sunday in the Jockey Club Mile. The Jockey Club Cup is a mile and a quarter. That drew a field of seven. Many of the ones that we saw in the Ladies' Purse a couple weeks ago will be back, including Panfield and Russian Emperor, that horse who won in Europe, ran in the Royal Ascot, second in the Hong Kong Derby last year, Galileo, now gelded. He'll be in for Doug White, and that'll be a nice field as they try to uncover some starters for the Longines race, which should have real good international company. And then the sprint race is going to just be fascinating on Sunday with Wellington, Skyfield, Courier Wonder, who had won 5 out of 5, got beat. You know, he's like, he's no longer the talking horse, but there was nothing wrong with his loss. He's back. Lucky Patch, who went 107 and changed last time out in an enormous performance, he's back. And this is the same kind of race. The top two carry 128. The rest carry 123. So Hocking Prawn and Wellington both carry 128. The rest carry 123. This race is, as you know, Randy was talking about timing. This race should go 108 flat or a tick better. So they will be motoring over the Sha Tin course. I think the rail is going to be a B+2, so they're not going to be down on the inside. But that makes that turn, that big wide turn, even a little wider. So they'll be making their moves around the turn before they hit the stretch. And then the rest of the card has some really intriguing races. There's a Class 2 going 1,000 meters, and that attracted Master 8, who is an immensely talented horse, and Nervous Witness. Now, Nervous Witness won his first two starts. He was beaten last time out. He's owned by Archie Da Silva, who owns Silent Witness, who one of the all-time greats.
Sure.
Won 17 in a row over there. So Nervous Witness gets a little chance of redemption here. Once again, going 1,000 meters on a straightaway. And then there's a Class 3 that has California Spangle. And California Spangle, the horse that I wrote about, won two Griffin races in blazing fast times. Then came out this year, got beat at the wire. No reason not to think he can't bounce back against Class 3 company, especially. He's at the top of the class. He's rated 80. So he'll carry 133 pounds, but that will not be a problem if he's anywhere near what he was in those Griffin races. So really good card of racing coming up Sunday, Saturday night, West Coast time, 8:45 first race. So you can basically get the whole card in if you live out there. 11:45 p.m. East Coast time for race number one for a 10-race card coming to you from Sha Tin. Last week we had the Panasonic Cup. That went in good time to Lucky Express. John Sides and Zach Pert, they went to 7 furlongs in 21.22. The week before, the last week this time, the last race of the night, Happy Valley had You're My Everything. And this horse was a first-time start, and I looked up all the barrier trials. And they only had one good barrier trial, and it was at Happy Valley. His other barrier trials were not much. And the bettors responded accordingly. He was dismissed at almost 18-1. Well, he comes flying over the top of everybody. Just dominates the last race of the night at Happy Valley. Looks like a horse with a big future. So we'll get to see him. And Lucky Express, he won. Ultra Express won on the all-weather in very fast time. Going 16:50, so next big all-weather race, we'll probably see Ultra Express going into Stakes Company, but good racing last weekend, obviously good racing today, lots of prices and form and everything else, and then we head on to Sunday for Sha Tin's three Group 2 stake races, 6 furlongs, mile and a quarter.
Excellent. Dick, let me slip in, got about 7 or 8 minutes, let me slip in a couple of questions. You you mentioned the, you know, not wanting to circle back to the issue at Breeders' Cup with the juvenile turf, although there were some interesting Hong Kong Jockey Club conversation points about it, including how they might have handled things on Saturday had a similar scenario unfolded. But I would ask you react to the conversation with Randy Moss, and we're going to have Matt Hegarty at 10:40. And Matt's going to walk through some more of the HISA rules that have been floated out since late last week. We had Alan Foreman on Monday. And I was curious your reaction to, don't know how much of it you've read, but it's 70 pages. I printed out to pull a line from Beetlejuice, reads like stereo instructions. Some thoughts on the two topics?
Well, my first reaction is my reaction to your reaction on Monday, where I was a little worried for you then, Stevie, as someone who just had a heart attack and had a stent put in. You were getting pretty fired up there, son. And I can't agree more. If you're gonna be Travis Tiger, and you're gonna be the lead dog, so you're gonna be the one who's gonna do all frontman type stuff, and you're gonna lead with this phony 4% increase in betting because the bettors recognize that all these international horses are coming because of the anti-doping measures that have been put in place, and never mention, gee, what was different this year that wasn't there last year? Let me think. Japan, $11 million that wasn't in the pool last year. There's your 5%. Oh, you know, just if you're going to be that, I don't know what the word is.
Disingenuous is the word. Disingenuous and...
He's not being disingenuous. He's got to be smart to be disingenuous. That was not smart. Your audience, in your mind, is so stupid that they're going to buy this. Now, maybe on Madison Avenue or wherever the Jockey Club headquarters are, maybe that goes over real big. Ha ha. Gee, look at that. We're up. Hey, pat ourselves on the back again. But to lead with that, it's just... in other words, if you lead with your best argument, if that's your best argument, then listening to Alan, and I can listen to Alan, and I can grit my teeth sometimes when I listen to Alan. But I agree with much of what Alan was saying, and when you do read the 70 pages, you do come away with this impression of we don't get what we want. We're walking. So, okay, now how is that viewed in Madison Avenue or wherever, Park Avenue? How is that viewed that if this doesn't go the way they want it to go, they're not going to be involved and we're back to kind of square one. But July 1st coming pretty soon. So, It was just, I understood your passion. I was exactly the same when I read it. And there's a point. I shouldn't get disappointed because I shouldn't have expectations. Hmm. But somehow the naivety of myself still expects something good to happen. And then you get let down. Every time. I'm like, what was I thinking? How could I have any expectations? Well, What's the matter with me?
There's one message here that isn't being, and I asked Alan about this. I mean, who is going to respond, cohesively and constructively during this very short time period? You're talking the first week of December. They say that they'll send this to the FTC to be institutionalized and codified. Let's see. We've got Thanksgiving next week that is going to obliterate 3 days, give or take. Who exactly is going to come forward with a response? And the one response that people, I think, had better come to grips with is to get behind the HBPA. And that attempt to paint the National HBPA's challenge of this as some sort of an effort, to the status quo, and that you're for the worst elements of racing if you don't get behind HISA. I hope people now, if they take the time to actually understand what has been, these early portions of this rule framework, they they need to kind of wake up here before they find themselves essentially being dictated to by, I'll use the phrase again, a handful of elites that want to control the business, and this is their method, and this is their operational system to do it, and to essentially close off certain aspects of the sport because they find it undesirable, and choke off low-level racetracks, lower-level racing, lower-level breeding, you name it. And until they get Keeneland twice a year, and Saratoga, and Del Mar, and a couple of other boutique-y things, that's been, we've said it for years here, and I'll let Sid, if Sid's in the mood, to talk about a class warfare, because that's what it is, period. And the more people they can drive out that they deem undesirable, the happier they're going to be.
And then you've said that from day one, and nothing has happened to change that opinion. You know, I'm willing to admit I'm wrong. I'm willing to admit that this might be a better plan. I'm open-minded on literally everything if it helps racing. But you can't. I don't see other than the smear of racing that they can then undo. So they created a problem, and they got rid of the problem. Okay, but you created the problem initially. I wish I would have heard more about, we're going to fix these labs. We're not going to have New York telling trainers that, oh, we consumed the entire sample. You can't have a split sample. That should never be allowed, and there should be rules in place to prevent that from happening. And if that does happen, that lab should not be accredited to be a testing lab. It's real simple. And yet that happens all the time. When these samples get shipped and damaged and stuff, how the heck does that happen? You know, are we buying, you know like the juice box containers? That's what we're putting a sample in. And they get damaged. I'm like, what the heck?
It's the peanuts lunchbox thermos.
Exactly. So it's just like those things. At least tell me you're going to clean up all of that, so that if someone does in fact have a positive, I don't have to worry about, you know, whether the radar gun was working when it said I was going 85 miles an hour. You know, if it said I'm going 85, I should have been going 85. Not, we haven't gotten the radar gun calibrated in 6 months, and it could be 95 or 65. You know, just stuff like that. Just the usual lawyer stuff that lawyers bring up to try to, you know, break down credibility of cases. Those things shouldn't even be on the table. And yet they still are. And the whole Baffert saga this year exposed all that. No, it should have been what we heard out of Arkansas, we heard out of Kentucky, slam dunk. It wasn't a slam dunk. Or your idea of a slam dunk is not my idea of a slam dunk.
No. And before we go, Dick, the timing as well. That's another part of this that is just maddening. We're gonna completely try to reinvent a system. It doesn't need reinventing; just needs to be refined and have uniformity brought to it and its application refined. But no, we're not going to do that. We're gonna reinvent something using an organization that has never seen anything with four legs. Okay, it can't keep track of 700 boxers, but is going to keep track of 25,000 horses. Good, you bet. Got it. Sounds good. But in the meantime, we can't accurately time a race. the basis of the entire sport. Can't do that. We're going backwards. We're using technology from the 20s now as the reliant format to correct the problem.
And as Randy just said, we can't accurately time the race, time the our biggest races, Breeders' Cup. We can't even get that right. So once again, who's looking out for the betters? I think the timing all works to USADA's advantage, because as that clock keeps ticking, as those pages come off the calendar, July 1st is coming fast, and how do they not do what USADA wants and run the risk of USADA walking and the whole thing goes up in smoke?
The whole thing, the court system will have a say in this before anything. So,
well, when we go to the symposium, Robert Hartman has set up all these panels with the various committees, and they will all be there. And apparently, they're going to take questions, and that should be number one, educational, informative, and could be fun to watch.
And maybe, you know, another couple of weeks, maybe they'll figure out a way to pay for it. That's the other thing that has continued to, you know, to be a mystery. Well, it's going to cost what it's going to cost, and whatever it costs, you can't afford to not pay it. That's the answer we've gotten so far. That's the explanation.
You could easily say you're already paying for instance, in New York, every time you start a horse, even in harness racing, there's a starter fee of $20-something. Now, can you do a drug test for $20-something? No. But if there's eight horses in the race and you collect $170, that might be enough to do three drug tests on the, you know,
top finishers.
Decide
yep.
need to be tested. So in a lot of ways, there are funding mechanisms already in place. They just don't show up in line items of budgets and stuff. So that could be still in place. That could be possibly increased. I wouldn't mind seeing that increase if it meant cleaning up these labs and not having the issues that have been exposed just in 2021. God knows how bad the issues were in the past. So yeah, I listened to you and Alan on Monday, and it was very good. And Randy's description of the sausage making of timing that was very good. But where's the big Zoom meeting with fixing all this?
Yeah.
That Randy's involved in, not the vendors and Equibase and Jockey Club and everything else, the end users. Where's the meeting where the end users, the consumers, get involved?
Yeah. All right. Dick, thanks for the visit. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
You, what is your schedule next week?
I got to take the whole week. I've got a procedure on Tuesday. They're gonna turn me into a Carmen Ghia. They're apparently the backside of the heart. The front side is fine. It's the backside of the heart. As I explained a couple of weeks ago, I've had the 10 claimer of heart attacks. So they're gonna go do some sort of a tune up on the backside of my heart Tuesday. So I'm gonna take all of Thanksgiving week.
Okay.
All right. I mean, it's nothing. There's nothing, you know, overly scary about it. Or life threatening. It just you know, this is like one of those situations where you get the car back from the shop and you know, you go and drive it around and you know, 2 days later, and you're like, something's not right. So you go back to the garage. They say, you know what? All right, we're going to put it up on the jack, and we'll see. we'll see if we left a couple of, you know, a couple of bolts maybe we left. I don't know what the hell. I don't know. So they're going to go.
What's amazing is how much you learn when it's about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
my God! Like,
yeah,
my heart issues are electrical. They're probably different than yours, and so you learn. And I had that pancreatitis a couple of years ago, and you learn all about that stuff. And up until then, I knew nothing.
Exactly. Every part of this has been you know, kind of a revelation. But happy Thanksgiving, and
thank you, Steve.
I appreciate it, and we'll get all ready for. Yeah, I appreciate it. We'll get ready for the HKIR when we get back. All right. Dick Powell, everybody, Hong Kong Jockey Club, HKJC Racing on your Twitter. Let's take a break, and second half, more or less, plus 10 minutes. We got Sid to talk to. We've got Matt Hegarty. We got Seth Merrow. And, well, I something tells me I had one little opening, but I don't. Something tells me that's going to fill right up. Sid's going to join us next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Some new sire conversation. Sid's got a hat full of new sires he wants to talk about. I'll ask him about English Channel's legacy. And that theatrical mare conversation. Back after this. Second half at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.